people, we're parents and kids and moms and dads. There's this idea, I think, that somebody who's doing this is, you know, a pervert or some kind of a deviant that needs to be hospitalized. It's just couldn't be any further from the truth. I mean, I've had a very successful military career. I have children and grandkids. I'm a practicing nurse. I don't know how same I could be than anybody else in Alaska, other than one small detail.
Welcome to the East Anchorage Book Club. I'm your host, Andrew Gray. The purpose of this podcast is to tell the stories of Alaskans of interest and importance. Over the next week, I will be releasing a series of episodes on transgender rights. Today, our guest is Jessica Kolarczyk. First Sergeant Kolarczyk deployed with me and the Alaska Army National Guard's 297th Infantry Battalion to Kosovo in 2019 to 2020. During that time, First Sergeant Kolarczyk presented as a man, and I never suspected for a second that she was a trans woman. She was medically retired after 31 years in the military after her next deployment to Poland. Leaving the military gave her the freedom to begin her life as an openly trans woman with the support of her wife, her daughters, and her grandchildren. She is the lead plaintiff in a class action lawsuit brought by the ACLU against her birth state of Montana over the right to amend the gender on her birth certificate. The inspiration for this trans rights series is three bills currently moving through the Alaska State House. One which bans trans girls from playing sports, one which requires kids to get signed permission slips approving their preferred name and pronouns, and one which allows doctors to be sued up to 20 years after treating a trans youth. Alaska has many big problems today. The pressing need to increase the funding of our public school system and finding a solution for an imminent energy crisis among them. But instead of working on these very real, substantial problems, we are spending the last few weeks of session debating whether trans youth exist and have rights. They do exist. They do have rights, and over the next few days, we'll be hearing from them and their families.
Jessica Kolarczyk, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I really am excited to hear your story. I think just so listeners understand that you and I, we know each other. We deployed to Kosovo together. When we deployed to Kosovo, you were a first sergeant, and I did not know you were trans. To get started, tell us about your early life. Like, where did you grow up? What was your childhood like?
I grew up in Montana, divorced parents, and we moved around a lot. I think I went to a different school every year of my first through 12th grade, and I joined the Army as soon as I could get out. At 17, I joined the Army.
And did you know you were trans when you were young?
There wasn't a word for it when I was a kid. It was just that there was something wrong with me.
You never thought you were gay? I think that's like the stereotype that some people have.
Yeah, I knew I wasn't attracted to men. It just didn't feel right. And I did everything I could to be what I thought I was supposed to be. I went to airborne school, joined airborne infantry. I had tried just filling that masculine keyhole that I thought I belonged in.
I'll just say for listeners, as a first sergeant in the 297th Infantry, you were very masculine. This is just the most shocking, unexpected situation. Like I don't think I can exaggerate that finding out that you were Jessica was really mind blowing. But I guess during that whole, your whole period in the Army, you still knew or felt uncomfortable?
Every day was an effort to do the job right and put all that kind of stuff behind me. And I guess over time, it gets easier to pretend. The more you act, the better of an actor you are.
So, at what point did you have the vocabulary to say, I am a trans woman?
I think what happened was, I don't know if you know what happened after I deployed to Kosovo. I went to Poland to replace another sergeant major as the G4 sergeant major, senior sergeant in Poland. And I got a near fatal case of COVID. I ended up getting medevaced out to Landstuhl and got medically retired. And it was, I think, during that process that I realized that I was being that close to my own mortality. Felt like I was wasting my time pretending to be something that I didn't even really enjoy doing. I didn't enjoy the people that I worked with, the mentality of the people that I worked with. It was abusive and angry, and I just didn't even like it. And I felt myself just trying to fit into a group of people that I didn't even really relate to, with some exceptions, like yourself. And my medics were my favorites.
I want to say this, like, with as respectfully and kindly as possible. I kind of associated you with that ilk of upper enlisted army folks that were angry and hateful. No offense, but I did.
I know.
You fit in very well.
I didn't like that either.
You're married and you have kids.
And grandkids.
And grandkids. Congratulations. I didn't know that.
I have three grandkids and one on the way.
Wow. I don't want to be too personal, but how did you navigate your family?
So my wife of 18 years now has known since before she proposed to me. My family.
You told her, or she suspected?
I told her before we got married, when I was AGR in Ketchikan in 2004.
And did you use the words, I'm trans?
No, I just explained to her that I didn't fit what I presented. And
she understood.
Yeah. I don't think it, like I said, for a while, I thought there was something wrong with me and I had a lot of shame and wrapped around it. And I don't have that anymore. And really, if people don't like it, they can suck eggs. I don't care.
So your wife knew before you got married, and is this something that you talked about during your marriage? Did she know that this was something that you struggled with?
Yeah, we'd sit down at dinner and say, hey, let's talk about this stuff. It's just something that I'd shared with her, and I really just tried to raise my kids and be a good father and husband.
Are your kids from a previous marriage?
Yes.
Okay.
They're in their 20s.
And how are your kids with this issue?
Oh, they're great. I told them early on in my transition that I wanted to do this and that I needed to know if they were okay with it, because it was going to affect whether or not I did it. And I was told that they had no problem with it. And if their partners had problems with it, then they had a problem with their partners. It was really wonderful to hear that from my oldest daughter.
Did you tell them all individually, or did you sit your kids down together?
I told them individually. Took them out to coffee. Pretty much all my close friends, I would say, hey, let's go get some coffee. I got something to tell them. They were relieved when it wasn't cancer, I think.
So I guess to get back, so you got evacuated from Poland to Landstuhl for severe COVID. You were afraid you were going to die. You thought, man, this is not the way I want to live my life. So did you, when you got back to Alaska, did you like immediately make a phone call, or like, how did that unfold from you getting back in Alaska after the Poland deployment, getting medically retired, and then starting that transition process?
I got sick. Basically ended up in an ICU in Poland, which was scary. And then when I was stable, I was moved to Landstuhl. And then from Landstuhl, maybe a week and a half, I was sent to Madigan. And I don't know if you're familiar with the WTU, SRU model that they have down there, where people who are active duty that get sick, they're in that unit. So I was there from
Washington State. For people who don't know, Madigan's in Washington State.
Yeah. So I was there from November of 2020 to I retired July of last year. So I was assigned to them and I couldn't go anywhere, couldn't do anything. They did let me come home about 8 months in. I was able to come home and just report in on the phone. I found myself sitting in my house in the woods, contemplating, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And do I really want my reason for hiding was over. And I probably wouldn't have transitioned when I did if I didn't get, like, didn't medically retire.
You talked about taking your good friends to coffee. Did everybody react positively?
Every one of them. Surprised. And I found some people I haven't even really talked to. I haven't talked to the commander on that deployment yet. I received the wedding invitation, but I don't know if I'm going to go because I don't know how he stands, because he really hasn't reached out to me either. But I haven't really, didn't have any other close friends other than Jack. I don't know if you're familiar with Jack Androsky.
Oh, yeah. Of course, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, so
Androsky's been very supportive.
He has. I visited with them while I was in Washington. He and Rachel, his wife, were good friends of mine. And other than that, I don't have any other really close Army friends.
So while you were in that cabin in the woods, you thought, I'm going to do this. What is that process like? How hard was it for you?
So I've been getting counseling since before I left Washington State and discussing how I'm going to spend the rest of my life, knowing that I wasn't going to be able to be in the military anymore, and dealing with some other difficulties that I've experienced while I was in the Army. The first step was talking to a clinical therapist and then identifying what I actually wanted to do. And then finding a caregiver in Alaska is next to impossible. I contacted Identity and it took 8 months to even get them to return a phone call. And once I talked to and, you know, verified that I'd been getting treated from a therapist and all that was verified, I then discussed a plan with a caregiver at Identity. And I think it took maybe 4 visits before I was able to understand what the process looked like. And it's not something that you can really turn around from once you started it. They say you can, but I don't believe that's really accurate. I think it's definitely got a two or three year turnaround if you even wanted to. So it's not something that is easy by any means.
And did your wife have any hesitation or concerns about you starting hormone therapy? Or
sure, she was scared for my health. And surprisingly, when I started taking even the low dose estrogen, the heartburn that I've had almost my entire adult life went away in about 2 weeks. Like, I had GERD and I had been assessed for Barrett's esophagus, and I haven't taken even a Pepcid in 3 years. And I was hypertensive on the onset of my COVID, like severely, like diastolic in the over 100, to being my blood pressure is like 114 over 79 at the dentist the other day. So hypertension completely gone, almost all those cortisol related. Yeah.
So I'm assuming that you had a lot of stress and anxiety just from living a life that wasn't authentic.
And being unhappy made me an asshole, I think.
And did you feel an immediate change when you started the estrogen?
Pretty close.
Did your wife notice the change?
She did. She said, I'm a nicer person. Easier to get along with and less quick to get short with people.
Do you feel like you're a different person?
I do.
I mean, I guess for somebody like me who only knew you before, who is Jessica?
I'm not a different person. I just am not wrapped up in formality. I kept most of me at arm's length to people, with some very few exceptions, even my kids.
So you feel like you have a closer relationship with your family now?
I do.
I know you said that you had support from your family, support from your close friends. I just can't imagine, though, that there haven't, and maybe I'm wrong, but that it would be difficult as a new trans woman to exist in Anchorage. What is that experience like?
It gets easier every day. At first, it was really hard, and I just found myself hiding in my house. At some point, developing your body, developing makes it to where it's impossible to pretend to. This is about as, I don't even want to say, this is about as androgynous as I can look without just, somebody's going to look anyways. And I just try and make myself look presentable and clean. And
yeah, that's an interesting thing. So I assume that when you first started the estrogen, when you would go out in public, you would present as a man. And then at a certain point, you felt like you couldn't do that anymore. So you had to start going out in public as a woman.
Yes. It would depend on who I was around and where I was going to. I found the grocery store was the hardest, especially in Palmer. Everybody thinks they have an opinion about everybody else. Anchorage is a little different.
Have you run into folks who knew you from before who are surprised to see you presenting as a woman?
Which is funny. I get my healthcare now at the VA, and I walk right past people that have worked with me for 20 years and don't even bat an eye and just walk right past me. It's funny. I'll tell my wife, I'll be like, I worked with them for 15 years. They didn't even look at me.
Do you think it's because they don't recognize you?
I do. I don't really look anything like I did before, I don't think.
Part of the reason why I'm doing this series of interviews is because we have three anti-trans bills moving through the Alaska legislature right now. And how does that feel for you? And what's the experience like of being a new trans woman? You've found yourself, you feel more comfortable being yourself, but yet you're watching the Alaska legislature considering legislation that's basically making it more difficult to be trans in Alaska.
I think it's happening all over the country. I know I shared with you. I'm not sure if you want me to go into it, but
you can do it.
So I am the only named person in a class action lawsuit against the state of Montana where they're preventing through legal maneuvering from the governor, preventing somebody from modifying their birth certificate with the exception of scrivener's errors and driver's license. And it's basically trying to legislate trans people out of existence, or at least on public roads or in public places where their birth certificates are required. And Alaska's doing similar things. And it's not everybody. It's just a vocal minority drives this conservative train that people decide, oh, I'm either left or right, and they vote for these ridiculous draconian legislative maneuvers that are pushed by the extreme right. I don't think it's right. And I want to do what I can to help others in my situation, or to prevent some kid from spending his entire life trying to hide from who he is, because, or she, because they're afraid of some conservative jerk that lives down the road that has absolutely nothing to do with them.
Question, if you're comfortable answering, were you able to change your birth certificate and driver's license in Alaska?
I have a Montana birth certificate, and that's the reason for the lawsuit.
Gotcha.
My driver's license and my social security card, my nursing license is in the process. I've changed my name with the VA and with DEERS. So everything but Montana's birth certificate is the only thing that's been the problem so far.
The folks who are listening to this podcast who don't know trans people or don't think they know trans people, and maybe are afraid to ask questions or don't want to appear to be insensitive, or I guess, what would you want them to know? What would you like to say to them?
That we're people, we're parents and kids and moms and dads. There's this idea, I think, that somebody who's doing this, you know, a pervert or some kind of a deviant that needs to be hospitalized. It's just couldn't be any further from the truth. I mean, I've had a very successful military career. I have children and grandkids. I'm a practicing nurse. I don't know how same I could be than anybody else in Alaska, other than one small detail.
Do you wish that you could have lived your life as a woman sooner?
Absolutely. I think this would be easier if I started it sooner. If we're doing magic thinking, sure, she'd wave a wand and have done it. This is the path I walked. It's not really changing it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if I could, life has made me what I am. Maybe if things were different, it wouldn't feel this way. But yes, I wish I could have changed in my teens.
Why do you think that so many legislatures, not just Alaska, are so focused on trans youth?
Because it's an easy target with very soft representation. People are afraid for themselves and for their kids. And I think that I think that every single time that a trans person commits a misdemeanor, it gets blown up into a big media circus because it's an easy low-hanging fruit that has no representation. And in taking my issue to the Montana court, I hope in some small way to show people that they don't have to be afraid. The worst thing that can happen is that somebody's going to break into your house and try to kill you.
I feel in some way you're a little bit protected by being in Alaska with the lawsuit in Montana, but I would still think that you would have some trepidation about having your name in that lawsuit in Montana.
I don't think it would happen if I didn't use my name, though. I think that it doesn't carry the same weight if it was just two Jane Does, mm-hmm. which what it would be before if I mm-hmm. hadn't used my name. And I don't think that the ACLU would have taken my case if I wasn't willing to be named.
Yeah, thank you so much for sending me that article. And for folks, I'm going to drop an article about the lawsuit in Montana in the show notes so that they can take a look. I want to ask a question. I've held on to this question, well, since 2019. When we were in Germany, before we arrived in Kosovo, I got like an anonymous text message from somebody in the unit who said that they were trans and they were never going to be able to live openly. Was that from you?
No.
Oh my God. There's somebody else.
It wasn't me.
There's somebody else at the 297th because I got a random text message when we were in Germany at 1 a.m. from somebody. Is there any last thing that you'd like to leave listeners with? Any last words of wisdom?
Support each other. If you know somebody who's trans, just be their friend like you would if they weren't trans, because they're probably struggling and could use a friend. Every friend that I've had has been great about it. You know, like, oh yeah, this isn't going to change a thing. My dance card has definitely opened up because the dinners that I was invited to before and the lunches that I would go to have definitely dropped way down. Like, my social life is less, even though my friends have expressed that they don't have a problem with it. I find myself home more. So don't, if you say that it doesn't bother you, mean it.
So I guess that's interesting. So to your face, they've said that they're very supportive, but you're not getting invited to parties. You're not getting invited to dinners. You're not doing as much socially with friends as you did before. Have you made new trans friends?
I've made some friends because I came out I rekindled some old friendships that have become very important to me because I've come out. But I find that the trans community, just being trans isn't enough to have a purpose for starting a friendship. And that's my finding. I've met some people because they were trans and they really don't.
I feel guilty for even asking the question because this happens to me all the time. They're like, oh, there's another gay guy who works in this building. You guys can be best friends. And I'm like, yeah, probably not, but thanks for letting me know.
I'm going to say this to you and you can cut this out. When I first met you, I actually thought you were pretty cool. You were smart. You were in the medical profession. Something I was striving to do is either become an NP or a PA. And I was like, I think I was talking to another officer in the unit and there was a comment about you being gay. And I'm like, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. And yeah, I don't think our orientation has anything to do with who we find is interesting or people who would make good friends.
No, 100%.
It's unfortunate. That's like the first place that most people's brains go.
I think in the Army in particular, and I could be wrong, you've observed it in a more objective way, but in the Army, when people were friends with me, they were making a brave effort to be friends with me because I do believe that there was probably judgment and comments to them about spending time with me.
That is the case. Yeah, that is, there is ignorant people out there that and somehow they make it to places of authority and they don't think they realize the influence that their words have.
I guess what I'll say then is, anyone who's listening, who is friends with me with the T-97th Infantry, thank you for your bravery. I appreciate it. And thank you, Jessica Kolarczyk, so much for being a part of the lawsuit, for living your life authentically, for coming on this show and talking about this, because this is not easy to do. And it having conversations like this really does make a difference.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I have dropped a link in the show notes to an article about the Montana lawsuit that Jessica Kolarczyk is a plaintiff in. To contact me, email rep.andrew.gray@aklegg.gov or call our office at 907-465-4940.